You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines. We're back for a brand new week and some brand new topics. We're coming out a little late this week. There was a state of the industry meeting, conference, powwow, whatever you wanted to talk or call it, that I just attended. Literally just got back home about an hour ago, even a half hour ago. Snagged a bite to eat, and here we are going to recap a little bit of that as well as a few other things that have been on the docket since the last time we chatted. Before we get into that, of course, we want to go through our usual announcements. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines on YouTube, Instagram, where we're the most active. Of course, you can find us on the social network formerly known as Twitter, and the Book of Face. Those four places are the best places to find us. You can also check out our website, mtgawines.com, check out information on our wine club, sign up for our newsletter, see what wines we have available in our shop. Please be 21 years of age or older to order, all of that good stuff. There's also a link to our summer newsletter. If you happen to miss it, you can find that down in the description of the video. We'll have a link to it. Also, all of the timestamps to the different topics that we are going to be covering today. So if you want to fast forward or jump ahead or go back and consume this episode or any episode for that matter at your own pace, please feel free to do so. All right, let's get right into it, shall we? We got a few things to dive into, and actually it turns out that many of them are very, very related about kind of this powwow that I went to today, which is why I wanted to do this a little bit later and also post it as quickly as possible after the fact, rather than wait till next week to, say, post an episode about this meeting that we were at. This state of the industry was really, really fascinating. I think it echoed a lot of what we've talked about here on the show in the past. It also, you know, was very, I think, solution-oriented, but not entirely. I think there was a little bit of pointing of fingers, particularly from the distributor side to the supplier side and back and forth, which is typically kind of how it goes. Wineries look at distributors and blame them for a lot of problems. Distributors look at us and say, hey, you guys aren't doing enough to support us. And it's kind of round and round we go, just chasing each other's tail. We talked about reducing prices of wine, finding better value despite increased costs and the expense of doing this business, the legal challenges, how difficult it is to make reasonably priced wine anywhere in the U.S., not just Napa specifically. We talked about Napa County, and many of you have heard me talk about this in person on the show before, but the anti-wine industry policies that Napa County has really propagated over the years, and the federal lawsuit that is ongoing and in the works right now between three different producers and them actually suing Napa County to try and change all that. There's all kinds of stuff we're going to get into today. I mean, my goodness. But let's go ahead and do like a quick like recap, like state of the industry, like recap, I suppose, because I think that's a good place to start. You know, just to, for anyone that might be new here, or for anyone, you know, that has missed a couple of episodes and is tuning back in, let's dive into it just a touch. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, kind of this downturn that the wine industry is seeing, that there is an oversupply of wine right now and simply not enough demand, not enough people drinking enough wine. That is the case. That is certainly something that was echoed during this conversation. They talked a lot about, as I mentioned, you know, the cost of Napa in particular, flying here, getting a hotel room, getting a driver, going tasting, paying for those tastings, paying for wine, going out to dinner, the expense, and how crazy it has become out here. I think, you know, it was mentioned, and I haven't fact-checked this, but I'm sure it's pretty close, that, you know, the average hotel rate in Napa County right now is, like, somewhere between, like, $600 and $800 a night. Like, it's insane. And we're talking, like, the most average of accommodations when it comes down to it. You know, someone at the meeting actually brought up Auberge du Soleil, and they're like, it's $3,000 a night. I'm like, yeah, but that's Auberge du Soleil. Like, that's, you know, the crown jewel of the Auberge Resorts, like, thing. It's meant to be this ultra high-end, you know, resort. It's in a different thing. The Marriott downtown or outside of downtown Napa is a very different vibe, right? So, but it's still outrageously expensive for reasons, which is crazy, right? The Napa County stuff, you know, for those of you that are unaware of this issue, or maybe, you know, we haven't brought it up enough on this show, is that Napa County in general is, one, it's a pay-to-play kind of thing, very typically, if you're willing to do some of the road work for them and pay hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to have turn lanes put in and repave things and all that kind of stuff, they'll almost let you do whatever you want. But if you're a small family brand that can't afford to do those things and you're just trying to operate normally, they will slap handcuffs on you. They will give you a cease and desist. They will shut you down if you don't play by their arbitrary rules that they seem to make up on the fly. We're going to get into that quite a bit with a great news article today as well. You know, there's a lot of other topics we didn't really touch on in the state of the industry, like certain, you know, health concerns and where people are kind of viewing alcohol right now. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly for you? And that the reality is that moderation has always been the driving force behind wine being a healthy part of your life and finding enjoyment within it, right? I think we can all agree on that. That's kind of like where this state of the industry is. And what I liked was there was a lot of good kind of honest conversation. There are a lot of people that were trying to be solution oriented. There were, you know, it was just good to hear kind of where people were and like what their current like temperature of the state of the industry is. I think what was nice was that despite this downturn, you know, you're seeing, you know, some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. You are seeing some people that are, you know, cautiously optimistic about, you know, where things are going, how things are going. And that's great, right? You know, I think there needs to be some sort of North Star shining light that we should, you know, try to look forward to rather than focusing on the problems. I think any good manager knows this, is that when an employee comes to you and they're bitching and moaning about whatever it is they're upset about, that anybody can do that. Anyone can point out, you know, what the issues are. But can you, you know, be solution oriented? Can you try and find a way to move forward, right? And find a way over, through, under, around whatever, you know, issue it is you're finding. Like, that's the key. And I think that was pretty great about today's, you know, kind of session, was that there were a lot of people that are very, you know, solution oriented and coming from different points of view of what can we do. And that there are obviously many different solutions that we can try to look for. So I think let's try and dive into, you know, let's start, you know, how it affects kind of you guys, the consumers out there. And as much as I am a wine consumer myself, you know, let's talk about, you know, kind of the implications of Napa kind of outgunning itself and probably just getting way beyond, you know, what it ought to be in terms of pricing, in terms of experiences and all that. You know, one of my, you know, long-term colleagues and someone who was my Boy Scout leader growing up here, someone who has been in this industry out here in Napa for going on 50 years now, Stu Smith up at Smith Madrone. Someone that I put, you know, a lot of trust behind because he's someone that's been doing it for a while. And Stu's got his opinions. You might not agree with all of them, but he's a straight shooter, you know, much like I try to be, you know, telling people kind of how it is. And he, along with others on the panel today, you know, someone had asked, you know, how are all these issues and headwinds that we're facing, like, what, how is that actually impacting bottom lines and pricing and all this good stuff? Someone else actually tried to, you know, suggest, like, how can wineries reduce prices? Would you expect wineries to reduce prices, given, you know, the state of the market. And I think the consensus really was, we'll see. You know, there seems to be obviously a lot of concern about the amount of wine currently available, the amount of people that are long on inventory. We are talking about this, and we have been talking about this with clients out at the winery and via text and email and all this other stuff, that, you know, there are a lot of great deals right now. You're seeing Cabernets that are in that $100, $125, $150, $185 range being significantly discounted all over the place. And obviously that is a brand and a marketing decision. That is a big business decision to make, because you're completely resetting the value of your brand and really your client's expectations of that value and what it's really worth and what they should be paying for it. That can create all kinds of problems. But I think this is something that the smart brands are doing, is they're looking at this and saying, number one, if it's the difference between us staying in business or going out of business, maybe we need to think about what our margins are, what we can really operate on, and trim as much fat as we can to continue operating in a way we need to or want to. But maybe just trying to sling wine at north of $100 a bottle isn't going to be the thing that's going to continue floating us. We're going to need to find more ways to connect with more consumers. And this got into a whole conversation about value, you know, and access, and that price arguably determines access to wine. Because no matter how much you or I love a particular wine and want to drink it on a regular basis, at a certain point it comes down to price. And is it accessible? You know, is $50 a bottle accessible to me? Is $20 a bottle accessible? Is $500 accessible to me? Like, relatively speaking, you know, every person, every one of us is going to have a different means of access to certain price points of wine. Some have no problem spending north of $100 or $300 or $1,000 on a bottle. Some won't spend more than $10. So, you know, where are you going to try and meet your consumers? Can you find a way to meet them where they are? We've talked a lot about that in the last few weeks as well. I think that what was interesting, and as we were talking about kind of the reducing prices, finding value, what can wineries do to help, you know, do this? And Stu said this as well, is that, you know, between him, his brother Charlie, one other person, and three guys that work in the vineyard, it's six people. They do all the work themselves. There's no fancy consultant that they've hired. There's no additional consulting winemaker. There's not another farming crew that does the work. It's all in-house. There's no extraneous, you know, salaries being paid that realistically shouldn't be there. And we've mentioned that in the past here on the show, is, you know, when you have a company, right, you're the owner. You're not necessarily going to be in the cellar working. You're not hosting tastings. You're not running the wine club. You have to hire other people to do that. But what that's doing is adding on another salary that you now have to account for when it comes to your cost of labor, right? When it comes to selling, the cost of selling that wine. So it can dramatically, if you're not running, you know, a relatively bare bones program, I mean, it's easy to see why, you know, you see tasting fees going north of, you know, $100. Right? $150. In fact, there is a good buddy of mine who's, you know, I'm not going to mention the brand or talk too much shit, but, you know, they offer a tasting experience, which is $150 a person, and which is actually kind of, it's, you know, expensive. And you can add on and do lunch for another $150 a person. So, you know, if you're going to go up there for a tasting experience, you're talking $300 a person all in. And he did mention, of course, that if you're buying wine, that they'll waive the tasting fee at a certain point. Great, cool. Let's say that's possible. But now you're still out, you know, you're spending $150 on lunch a person, which is expensive. Because even if you go to Gott's Roadside, you're going to spend probably close to $40 a person, you know, especially if you're having a glass of wine or, you know, a beer or something to go along with it. Those burgers aren't cheap necessarily. You can do it a little bit more on a dime, but let's be real here. Like, you're probably going to spend about $40 a person. So if you're going to ask for more than 3x kind of what a casual lunch would be, granted, you know, maybe the private estate is worth it. You could be there with some of your best friends. The food, actually, I will give him this, is that the chef that they have is outrageously talented. Like, the food is really good. We got to sample some of it. It's just great. It's really good stuff. But is that, but you know, there are plenty of people right now that are of the opinion that that's just too much. Like, that's not what we want. That's not what we need. You know, granted, this winery is out there. Like, it's not like you can just go up there and then jump right back into town to, you know, have lunch. It's going to be about a 40-minute round trip to and from this winery in the closest town. So, and that's if you're moving pretty fast. It's probably going to be closer to an hour. So you're going to have to budget time for things like that. And I know that many of us who are on vacation traveling places, we don't want to spend as much time in the vehicle, you know, driving around, right? Anyway, you know, this is the kind of this, like, you know, pricing, like, fatigue I think many of us, both inside and outside of the industry, are experiencing. It's like you see these high price tags and you're just like, gosh, like, what do we have to do to just, like, taste some good wine and hang out and not worry about it? So I think that there's something that can be done, but there's also now, I think, three salespeople that work up there. You know, there's a winemaker, a consulting winemaker, there's a vineyard crew, there's, I think, a GM and...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Another person there as well. I mean, it's a big team for a small production. They don't need all those people. That's the reality. But, you know, someone was convinced somewhere that those people are needed and that the brand is only going to get to a point of profitability and success, whatever that number is for them, if we have this team of people. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, one person can only do so much. But you also have to imagine that, you know, one person is only going to do so much, especially when they don't have a vested interest in the business. Their name's not on the label, right? They're an employee. So there's going to be a certain point where they say, you know, you either need to pay me a bunch more, you know, if I'm going to work 70 to 80 hours a week, or we need to hire someone else to fill this position that we are kind of creating out of thin air, right? So that's part of it. So, you know, you can reduce costs any way, shape, or form when it comes to the size of the team, the consultants, and all this other stuff. I actually looked, I created a spreadsheet. This is one of the great things I did with, you know, some AI work a couple months ago. It was created kind of a cost of labor when it comes to producing our wine specifically. Because as you might imagine, like different wines, you spend more time on certain wines, right? Our whites and rosés and things, those are bottled after 6-7 months maybe. You know, we don't spend nearly as much time on those wines. You know, things like our Pinot Noir or Diversum wines, you know, it's maybe a year, not 11 months. You get to some of our bigger reds, we're talking 2 years. You know, there's more labor, there's more time being spent on certain wines. And, you know, based on what is probably a novice calculation, you know, that can range from, in essence, like $1 or $2 a bottle up to like $20 a bottle. And as you might expect, the wines that take longer to age and there's more work to be done on them, they're probably more expensive, right? That's kind of typically how that works. Well, the wines that are bottled quicker are a little bit cheaper. You know, and there's some variation in there. But, you know, what can you do as a winery to reduce that? Okay, do you shorten up the aging time from 2 years to 18 months or even 11 months? How does that impact the wine? And I can tell you it's very different because you can taste our Cabernet Sauvignon that is the cheap and cheerful version that we age for 11 months. And then you can taste the one that's aged for 22 months. And we can, and then another year in bottle. So for 3 full years of aging, actually, when it's all said and done, versus basically a hot 11 months, 18 months at the most, right? And you can taste the difference. You can say, this is a year and a half of aging versus 3 years. Like these are distinctly different wines. And I can tell you the one that's aged for a shorter period of time, albeit it is cheaper to produce, is not your normal Napa Cabernet. it's very solid. That's our Diversum Cabernet for those that have tried that. You know, it's still, I think, 65 bucks a bottle. It's still, you know, not a cheap bottle of wine, but it's half the price of our Napa Cabernet. But that's because the cost of labor is basically 3 or 4 times less on that wine. So we can, where it's also built to be out in the wholesale market eventually and in restaurants and retail shops. So our margins are a lot slimmer on that wine. We don't make a lot of money on that wine, but we're also not supposed to, right? It's supposed to be more for marketing and presence and getting our brand and name kind of out there. So we kind of take that one on the chin a little bit. You know, we've also talked about, and this is maybe something I've mentioned and maybe not, but with this bottling, we changed glass suppliers to buy cheaper glass. Some of it's good quality. It's not the quality we were using before. It's a little wavy. The seams are a little thicker. It's not the nicest looking glass, but it's way more affordable. You know, probably like a third cheaper. We're using different corks for most of our production now that are much cheaper than kind of the nicer corks that we have been using. Brittany's wines, you know, Blair Payton all switched to screw caps. You know, there's a lot that can be done. Our labels, we used to emboss a lot of our labels, which costs a lot of extra. I think we saved close to like $3,000 or $4,000 in just label costs because we didn't emboss a lot of stuff with this bottling run. You know, there's ways to do this. And whether or not we've talked about this, and we talked about this quite a while ago, I can't remember which episode off the top of my head, but you know, if any one facet of a wine, the cost of producing a wine goes down, you're not going to see a huge, you know, difference in realistic the retail price, maybe up to a couple of dollars. I mean, it's not really going to make a lot of sense to adjust your pricing a whole lot. And something that we've tried to do, and I think others are likely trying to do this, I doubt we're the only ones, are trying to reduce all of these cost centers as best we can. That way we can either, one, maintain pricing where it's at, or two, actually take price reductions in our products and try and make them more accessible to you, the consumer. This tug of war right now with the glut of wine, the expense of making it, and the price that it kind of has demanded over the last, you know, 10 years is being turned on its head right now. And a lot of folks are trying to figure out like which way is up and how are we going to, you know, move forward with this. And I think, you know, this is one of those times, and I think they said it during this panel as well, is that you just have to be creative. You have to kind of throw stuff at the wall and see like, hey, is this actually working? Can we experiment? Can we be aggressive? Can we produce certain wines? And if they fail, they fail. You know, that's kind of what we're looking at with a couple of things in our portfolios. Like there's stuff that just hasn't worked and we're having to shift and adapt and adjust. And I think we're finding our path as a result. You know, I mentioned some of the other like cost side of things, like, you know, expensive permitting, licensing, compliance, all that good stuff was talked about. And, you know, I'm not going to get too much into the Napa politics. I know I mentioned it. It's small town politicky stuff. If you really, because frankly, there's a lot of other people that are, you know, kind of at the front line of this, who have a much better understanding. If you're really truly interested in it, there's a timestamp down below in the description called False Facts, and there's a link to a wine business article from the Hoops family. You can Google Hoops Vineyard Napa and legal trouble or legal battle or whatever, and you'll get the whole story. I'm not going to get too far into it. It's complicated. It's a rat's nest. It's annoying. I'm trying to find a decent way to, you know, present it and keep it entertaining and for you all rather than just, you know, bitching and moaning about small town politics stuff. But if you're really truly interested in kind of like the legal battles that are ongoing within this county in particular and what the county is doing to try and inhibit wine businesses from being successful, I highly suggest you check out this wine business article. There's a bunch of videos, kind of YouTube videos, very short, like a minute, maybe 2 minutes each from the Hoops family about some of these topics. I highly suggest you check that out. And, you know, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, because we've talked about it, many of you have asked questions about it. And it's a very much an inter-industry problem. Maybe some of you as wine consumers are like, yeah, it's local politics, we don't care about it. But these are the kind of things that we do have to deal with to try and just make the wines that we want to make and eventually, hopefully, get them to your door at some point. And this is why, you know, supporting some small producers is so important, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff. There are a lot of headwinds that we face, this being one of them. So I put a timestamp out there. Check it out. There's more important, more interesting stuff that I want to get to today rather than, you know, complaining about our county politics right now. We're just going to leave it at that. So check out the link down below. Google the Hoops family. You can actually look up. I think the federal case has been filed. I know what the Hoops family is involved. I know Stu Smith and Smith Madrone are involved. You could probably Google that and, you know, find out a little bit more information about the federal case that they're building against Napa County in regards to licensing, permitting, and how things are being regulated or over-regulated here in Napa. It's very, very interesting. You know, I think, interestingly enough, the more interesting point that came from this roundtable kind of thing that we're at today was, there was a gal there, and God, I cannot remember her name, but she's fascinating because she's very high up at Southern Wine and Glaziers, which, for those of you who don't know, is the largest distributor in the country. They support the Americas, the Caribbean. They're a big deal, like billions and billions of dollars of revenue, big deal. And she brought up a lot of really great points. I mean, she's sharp, super sharp. Respect the hell out of what she had to say. But it did bring up like an interesting point. And what was interesting from her on the sales side, because she had been on both, I guess, as she's worked with suppliers. And suppliers, for those of you that don't know, are us, the winers. We supply the wine for them to sell. And her now being on the distribution side is that, you know, there's not enough. One of her points was that there's like not really enough support for the distributors from wineries, which I don't necessarily 100% agree with. There's, you know, she did point out like bottle shots, label shots, you know, information about the wines in terms of like tasting notes, stuff like that's not provided, you know, adequately, which fair enough. But that's on the winery and the marketing department, whoever that is, whether it's someone like me or Brittany who are a two-person show, or, you know, a larger company that is has an actual marketing department. Like, that is obviously a problem. But kind of and she wasn't like poo-pooing us suppliers and us wineries necessarily, but it does seem like there's always this pointing of fingers where it's like, we're here to sell your wine. We're here to build brands. We're here for you. But this is why it's not working. This is your fault. And this has nothing to do with us. You guys need to be, you know, supporting us as the distributor and giving us what we need. And that means pricing. That means marketing materials. That means flying out and doing work with and working the market with us. Like, we need support from you guys. And then the wineries, as suppliers, fire back and say, okay, we'll do some of those things. Maybe we can't afford to do all of them. Maybe we didn't get you that tech sheet on time. Maybe it got lost in the Ethernet somewhere. I don't know. But we point the finger right back and say, hey, we were there, you know, 4 months ago. We had these great wine dinners. We sold a bunch of wine. We got a new PO in. We're not doing another work with this fall because this was the spring. But we need to get another PO in. And you guys haven't been showing the wine. We haven't gotten any orders. You know, we need support from you guys. Like, we need you guys to help. You know, we need you to get the wine in the bag and get it in front of people. And there's this constant, like, back and forth between distributors and wineries. It feels like we're always kind of chasing each other's tail, trying to point the blame of whose issue it is. And it reminded me of this like amazing quote, which also was like tied into like the wine marketing side of things, which I will kind of key into here in a second. But it was like this, you know, it's almost like each side will just actively like boo one another. Like, boo, like, you're just bad at your job and you should feel bad. Like, it's your job to sell wine. You're just taking orders. You're not actually presenting it. And then the other side will say the same thing. And you're just like, okay, like, it's clearly both parties are at fault here. We need to find some sort of like middle ground to make it work. Because clearly the three-tier system and distribution and the relationship that wineries have to distributors is dysfunctional at best. And sales to all 50 states and selling wine to all 50 states is far worse than dysfunctional. It's an absolute mess. And us pointing the finger at one another isn't doing either of us any good. It's like, what can we actually do to try and move this needle forward? You know? And actually, that, you know, that is a tough topic because I'm notoriously bad at, you know, notoriously bad at distribution. Sorry, I got to type this down real quick. I lost my train of thought a second ago, and I got to put that down because I got another point I want to make. You know, and every time I talk to someone who focuses on the wholesale side of things, like, yeah, it's a grind. Like, it's going to be a mess. Like, you're just going to have to keep, you know, running around, chasing your tail, trying to make sure that they keep moving your product, that you're getting paid on time, that you're this. I'm like, yeah, but, like, how can they not, you know, it feels like a lot of times, and I will say this, it feels like a lot of times with us, a lot of the distribution that I've worked with over the years, that we don't get met halfway. I'm very lucky that today we work with some great people that do meet us halfway and do us a solid. And I feel that truthfully, it's more of a partnership kind of feeling rather than us trying to jam a square peg into a round hole, you know? And I think these relationships are getting better. I think her points were well taken. And I do think that more small and even large distributors are understanding that this needs to be more of a partnership. And that there are so many brands out there, arguably too many, and that some are going to have to go under for others to be more successful because there's just too much wine out there right now. Which is unfortunate, you know. As Rob McMillan from Silicon Valley Bank, who started their kind of wine division, he's a guru in the wine industry in terms of data points. You know, he stated this during the seminars that you can either increase capita, the number of people, or you can increase the per capita consumption. You can either increase the number of people, which we're not because generations are getting smaller, so that's off the table. So we need to increase per capita consumption. And he said it best, is like, if we could convince everyone who's already consuming wine just to have like one more glass of wine a day or every other day, we'd probably be in a much better position as an industry. But that's not where it's heading right now. So how can we, you know, collaborate and build these relationships and these partnerships that will be advantageous to all? And it starts with the supplier to distributor to retail to restaurant relationships. Like, we're all in this boat together and we got to sort this out. This is, like I think I mentioned, this is more of an inner industry issue, much like the politics of Napa County. But one that I think is interesting to talk about and interesting to hear, you know, what other people have to say about it. There's still this little bit of pointing of fingers between distributors and wineries. I think that shit needs to stop. It doesn't do anybody any good, realistically. I do wish, you know, the amount of times we've been told no, even in the last 2 years of trying to build some of these relationships, when we have fairly high-powered friends with certain retailers and restaurants and things of that nature in other markets outside of the ones we're in right now, we've kind of done the legwork. We're looking for that partner to be like, hey, help us, let us hand the baton to you and let's run this relay race together. And we've been told no a bunch. And that sucks because you're like, we're giving you everything we possibly can. You've asked for it. And then we get to the finish line. You say, nope, sorry, we can't do it. Like I said, I think we're very lucky to be working in the markets and with the people that we are now. But there's a lot more in other markets and in other places where, you know, we want to see some of these partnerships thrive, you know. And I think it is shifting that way. I think this is going to be a long-term thing. It's going to take a minute, but we'll get there. I think we're going to get there. So I mentioned like what did I say? It was the, like, each side is, you know, booing at one another saying, you're just not doing it. It's not good enough. It's, you know, it's almost like going to a sporting event, right? Like your favorite team is your favorite team until someone, you know, fucks up and then you boo, like, you know, you get mad or yell and talk trash to that player on your own team, even though they're on your side, right? It happens to the best of us. You know, you start talking shit about your favorite team, even your favorite player, because they're just not living up to your, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking that they should be. It happens. But there's a great quote that I was reminded of as soon as I said boo. And it was immediately, actually there's two, and they're kind of interlinked. One of them is, and some of you may know this show, is an animated show by the name of Rick and Morty. It's kind of an adult cartoon. It's hilarious. I find it's stupid. It's insane. But I love it. And one of the most amazing quotes from this show that I love is Rick is, he's doing something that's controversial. And he's like kind of this grandfather figure who's a complete shit show. But he does something controversial, and everyone like in the town or whatever is like booing him. They're like, boo. And he turns and to them and says, your boos mean nothing to me. I've seen what you people cheer for. And it's like, I'm getting goosebumps just hearing that, because it immediately went to kind of this, you know, where I think like some distributor relationships have gone, where like wine marketing and ratings have gone, where it's like, I've seen what you people have tried to champion, the brands you've championed, what's done really well, the bullshit you've been slinging and the shit you've been talking, you know, and then you come and complain to us, or you talk shit about a vintage, like go look at like a 2011 or an 06 or a 98 vintage that gets panned critically. And then you talk about a 97, like a golden era, you know, year that was good. It was fine. Right. And it was kind of this weird, in my own mind, I connected a lot of dots. It was like, I could see the matrix through this. And I was like, I've seen what, you know, certain people in this industry have cheered for over the years. And when they get pissy and they start booing what you're poo-pooing, what you're doing, it's like, guys, like I've seen what you get excited about, you know. I was at this hospitality party a couple days ago, and one of the sales guys was talking up their 2022 Cabernet, which I think got like a 98 from insert reviewer here. I don't really give a shit who it was from, but their cab got rated highly, 98 or whatever it was. And everyone in the crowd cheered. And I'm like, no one in this, like everyone here is in the industry. No one gives, like there's not a person from the media here. No one gives a shit. In this crowd, actually nobody gives a shit about this rating. Like it's a pure dick measuring contest. Everyone here knows it, yet they're cheering for it anyway. It's like, again, like your boos mean nothing. I've seen what you people, you cheer about bullshit. Like why are we poo-pooing these things all of a sudden? Why are we booing certain things? And that'll kind of bring me to my, you know, last point, I suppose, for this episode. This one's going by fast, you guys. This is what I need. I need like a little fire lit under me by going to like a little seminar or something like we have to, you know, to really get some, you know, banging content. I don't know how good this episode is actually going to turn out. I'm having a lot of fun. Hopefully you're enjoying it. But, you know, in back to kind of the state of the industry thing, you know, there have been so many people that have gotten into this industry in the last 10, 15 years that have just been like, this is what we're doing, bigger the badder, Napa Cab. And they've planted Cabernet in places it should be planted. They've hired consulting winemakers that they don't need to hire. They're spending so much, ungodly amounts of money kind of following the cookie cutter that had been created and catering to the audience that was kind of demanding this thing, whatever this thing was, kind of this vibe from Napa. I don't want to leave you with this other quote. This is kind of my like maybe thought-provoking kind of episode here as we, you know, get through these last couple of topics. And I think this is where the wine industry needs to get to. I think it's on its way there. People are realizing that this is kind of what we need to be doing. And obviously you want to appease the audience, you guys, the wine drinkers. We want to make sure you're enjoying the wine. But between the ratings and reviews, the expectations of Napa, let's say specifically, you know, if you're going to be a part of that, if you're going to kind of conduct that operation, right? If you're going to do something and be unique, be authentic, stand out of the crowd, insert marketing verbiage here, right? And I love this quote. I love this. This is another great quote. Big fan of this one. Is that at a certain point, right? And I quote, if you're going to conduct the orchestra, you need to turn your back on the audience. Right? At a certain point, you've got to just do the work You've got to grind. You've got to perform. You've got to have it dialed in. And you got to just put it out there. And the audience behind you may dig it. They may be picking up what you're putting down. And you might be able to conduct that exact thing for, you know, the rest of your career, perhaps. Or they might not, and you've learned something, and whatever you threw at the wall didn't stick. And now it's time to move on to the next thing. But at a certain point, you're gonna have to find your own way and trust that what you're doing in this art form, whether it's wine, music, whatever, sales, medical industry, I don't know, law, whatever, mechanic, it doesn't matter. At a certain point, you're gonna need to probably turn your back on convention and figure out where some of the lines are drawn. Can those lines be crossed? Can some of these rules be bent or even broken to create the next best thing? I think that's kind of the gist of, you know, what I got from the state of the industry, is that there's a lot of headwinds, people trying to reduce prices with increasing costs, you know, obviously legal issues, you know, and compliance issues, whether it's with the federal government, state governments, or Napa County specifically. The strain that distributor and supplier relationships have of trying to do, you know, the best they can, but always demanding more from each other in some situations, not always, but sometimes. And what people are really rah-rah-rahing about, and it doesn't actually make sense. And when are people going to actually start doing what they need to, like, when are they going to start acting on their own and conducting that orchestra, so to speak, and putting their faith in the audience, their trust in the audience and the consumers out there of whatever they're producing, that they'll understand or that they will enjoy what they're putting out there? It was, you know, this is a lot to cram into a 40-minute episode right here, but it was a very, very insightful conversation. I don't know if we solved all the world's problems, but it certainly laid out, you know, where there are opportunities and where there are potential solutions for these problems that we're facing as an industry. And that's a good thing. Doesn't mean it's going to be fixed overnight. Don't worry, you're going to still get to hear me bitch and moan about all kinds of fun things here about how tough this industry can be. Yeah, you'll hear from me. Don't you worry. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about how crazy this industry is, and we'll continue doing so. But it is nice to know that you have this community that is, for the most part, solution oriented and willing, you know, within the means that we have, willing to, you know, throw some stuff at the wall and see what sticks. All right. You all have an excellent rest of your day, week, evening, whatever the case may be. Help be part of the solution. Open up that extra bottle of wine this week. Have that extra glass of wine this week. You know, do your part. Only you can help the wine industry grow. We'll see you next week. I got to think of some more topics. I think I've covered a lot over the last couple of weeks. I'm curious what we're going to get into. It might be a little bit more harvest, a little bit more growing season kind of stuff. As we're, you know, basically a month away, maybe 5 weeks away from bringing in grapes. We'll see. I think that's what we're going to start getting into a little bit more as we get closer to the end of this month, and especially as we get into September. Of course, you know, please slide into our DMs. Throw some comments out there at us. You can go to our website, ntjawines.com, and ask questions as well. We have a little form at the bottom of the webpage, our homepage there, where you can submit questions for the podcast, all that good stuff. If there are other topics that you want to hear more about that we'll riff on and see what, you know, what other problems that we can solve here in this great old wine industry of ours. But take care. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on those social networks at mtjawines. Head to our website, mtjawines.com. Check out our summer newsletter. That link again is in the description. Enjoy that wine business article regarding the false facts of Napa County that we mentioned earlier in the show. And we will see you next time here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.